Okay,
fine. We are on Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph. We've just finished talking about Mitzvah Avera, about issues of Yush and Zela. That was what we just did now. So right up. Tanu Rabbanan Suka Gzula V'amesakech Birshus HaRabim. Rabbi Leza Poisel V'chachamim Achshirim. Oh, by the way, my apologies. I haven't had breakfast, so... I'm gonna eat something. As always, you are allowed to eat and drink when I give share if you want to. I don't mind. Okay. So if somebody steals a sukkah and uses it, or alternatively, he just puts schach up in Rishus Rabim, meaning he builds a sukkah in Rishus Rabim where he's not allowed to because it belongs to other people. And it's inherently a sukkah gzula, obviously, because the land it doesn't belong to you. Right? Rabbi Eliezer apostles and Chachamim say it is kosher. It's not kosher qua, it's a wonderful idea. Go ahead and steal a sukkah. Right? If you did it, you have fulfilled the mitzvah.
Is that because it's not actually gazel?
What?
It's in Rishus HaRabim. It's not actually stealing.
Okay. We'll see. I remember Nachman. Machlokes b'shatoykei v'schaveir v'hitziyei m'sukosai. Rav Nachman says that this machlokes, meaning the case where Rabbi Eliezer says it's actually possible, right, is when you physically take somebody and evict them from their sukkah. Right, but if you didn't do that, then you can use somebody else's sukkah, no problem. Right? Rabbi Eliezer, timing the mamar ain adam yotzi yedei chayva soi v'sukkase shachaviru. And Rabbi Eliezer isn't saying it's gozel, it doesn't work because it's gozel, he's saying it doesn't work because you're not allowed to use somebody else's sukkah. Right? You have to send all the sukkahs in your sukkah, in the one sukkah. Or if you don't, that's a problem. Therefore, when you do that, you sort of inherently pass the sukkah for you, right, because you're not in your sukkah. Right, we discussed this in the previous paragraph, remember?
Yes.
Karka nigzeles. If karka can in fact be stolen, right, remember we discussed this yesterday.
Yes.
But if karka can be stolen, sukkah gzulahi. Vinami karka nigzeles. Sukkah she'ulahi. If karka can be stolen, right? If karka... Now, no. I'm going to read the Rashi to you. It's important. It's relevant to what we were discussing yesterday, right? I don't usually, but fine. Klomar, that is to say. Im yish ala karka teres gezel. Right? If the tarka has the rules of gezel applying to it, meaning keshar mitalton lamed v'chesas gazlan. Right? Meaning, like, to be like not other non-real property. Right? Real property is a technical term for land. Non-real property is a technical term for not land. Right? If karka, right, can be stolen, meaning that it becomes, at least partially, if the gazlan has a kinyan, right, it's considered to be in the cheskas of gazlan. The gazlan is formally, legally in charge of it now, right, until such time as he returns it. Then it's a sukkah gzula. Then it's really a stolen sukkah. If karka cannot be stolen, that doesn't mean that there's no prohibition. Clearly, it's meduyuk in Rashi, right? If... It's not, the Rashi is saying the question of whether karka can be stolen is not about the love, it's not about whether there's a prohibition on selling land, it's about whether there are legal ramifications to selling land. Right? If it's not considered to be stolen, meaning it continues to be legamri, completely the property, and considered to be under the control of the person who originally owned it, who it was stolen from, then it's called a sukkah she'ula. Right? Then it's called a sukkah which is just being borrowed. Right? Rabban the time I would amri, Adam Yosiyadechava, Choyvaso, Besukosso, Shell, Kaveroi, Vekaka and Exilis, Besukosha Ulahi. And Rabbanan are passing like what they think, right, which is that somebody can fulfill his obligation of sukkah using somebody else's sukkah. Right, you can, go to somebody for a meal, and that's fine. Right, that's Mutarazukas. And Karka and Exilis. And karka can't be stolen, land can't be stolen, therefore it's a sukkah she'ula. Right? A sukkah she'ula is kosher, meaning, right, there's no avera, there isn't avera of zela here, there's no ramifications of zela. The bechefza, unlike a lulav which you stole, right, which becomes defined as a lulav which was stolen, with all the ramifications of that, right? in most respects, a Garson is like a shovel, but not an orb, right? And he has an obligation to return it. A sukkah which was stolen remains in the property completely of the person who originally owned it, right? The Garson has no rights and no responsibilities to it. And since that's true, he can actually fulfill the obligation, even though he, of course, did commit an avera. Okay?
But they both agree that if you pull the sukkah out of stolen, like, materials, like wood and tzracha and everything, that would be possible?
I don't think so, because that'd be a shinoi. Remember previous Amud discussed shinoi kona?
Yeah.
Assuming there was yush prior to the things being stolen, right?
Yeah.
Yush plus shinoi is kona, that would be a clear shinoi. Right? Therefore, because then you'd be done in mitzvah baba avira.
Yeah.
But we have to do the lambdas, I'm not sure. Maybe. Don't think so. I don't think so, but maybe. It's the next line in the Gemara. I did not remember that. Aval gazal eitzim v'sikeh kohen. But if he stole wood and used it for schach, right? Divrei Hakol ein lo ela dmei eitzim. Right? Okay, so I was right. Right? Everybody agrees that the only thing that's relevant here is what's called dmei eitzim. He has to pay for the value of the wood that he stole. Right? He's obligated to pay for it because, you know, when you steal something, you have to pay for it. You have to either return it or pay for it. But he is not obligated to... He is kosher. It's not gzula and it's not shilula because it's now owned by the person who built with it. Right?
Why is he not chayv to return the
eitzim? They're now part of his sukkah.
Yeah, but they just attach them just as...
Okay, so there is a rule that if you actually build, right, if you steal wood or wood or stone and you actually build with it, then in that specific case you don't have to return it. Why? It's a takana derabanan, because we're afraid that somebody's going to basically build a house with stolen materials, and then he's never going to want to admit what he did, and he's never going to want to do tshuva, and he's never going to pay the guy for what he stole, because he's worried that he would have to tear down his house and give back everything he stole. Therefore, Chazal mipnei takana sashavim, so that people will be more willing to do tshuva, Chazal made a takana that if you build with something you stole, then you don't actually have to return it anymore.
But should it actually be different for sukkah, because coming down is 7 days anyway?
Temporary. It's a structure. Does Rav Dazar still have it? I don't know. I mean, Rashi explained the way I did. He assumes takana sashalvim.
I've got a teresi akasha, and that is during the time of Sukkot, he's not going to want to admit what he did because he thinks he's going to have to tear down his sukkah.
Well, then it's unbuilt, usually.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's a good question. It's a good question. Why is this not considered impermanent?
Yeah, so what if you build something and then take it apart, like a sukkah? Like, let's say it's at the end, just wood. Would you then be exempt?
I think so. I think once you use it as part of a structure, you're exempt. That's the core of what's happening here. But I'm not sure why. It's a good question. As in, some sukkahs really are quite permanent constructions, right? The only thing that's not permanent is the actual schach. There's nothing in the Gemara that implies that's the case. I'm not sure. Thank you. Do you say the question the Gemara asks, why do you think that they're arguing either about Zela's Karka, right, or about the question of Sukkah Sheula? Right? Because we said that we're doing the Brisa compared it to a sukkah built in Rishus Arabim, right? Just as Rishus Arabim is not your land, so too, when it comes to sukkah shel chaveru, we're talking about a sukkah which is not your land, right? Note, what's the obvious question on that line in the Gemara?
Which line?
When the Gemara asks, how do you know that they're arguing about the status of land which was stolen, or at least that that's a reasonable possibility? Why, and then the Gemara has to prove it by comparing it to the other case in the Gemara. What's the obvious problem with that? With the question the Gemara asked? It's a sukkah. It's built on land.
Can't steal land.
What do you mean? How do you know they're arguing about questions of land? It's a sukkah. It's built on land.
Yeah, but it could be
to build it on stolen land.
Zero. The point is that, like, obviously, if they're arguing, they're arguing about stolen land.
Not the sukkah.
Why are they? What, like? No.
I know it's not a question.
If they're arguing about a sukkah, then obviously they're arguing about land.
Well, they could be arguing about the structures,
materials of the sukkah.
No, we said they agree about that.
That would be kosher.
They agree about the structures.
Yeah, they agree that stealing materials is not a problem because of, I mean,
well, then obviously
it's a problem, but doesn't pass the sukkah because it's a kind of sashavim.
Okay, fine.
There's a completely different reason. By the way, so Rashi deals with the question, and the answer is like, because there are ways to build a sukkah not on land, on a cart, on a boat, on an animal's back. Right, sukkahs that are not attached to the ground, right, are kosher. Some of them can be used on Yom Tov, some of them can't, but they're all kosher sukkahs, right? Yeah, and therefore, right, you might have thought that it could have theoretically been arguing about that, right, the fact that it's compared to Rosh Hashanah in the case that it's a sukkah that's built on land, right, a regular sukkah, not a sukkah that's, you know, built in this way that is non-permanent.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. By the way, the implication of that statement is to say that if you have, say, build a sukkah on a cart or on a boat, which already can be stolen, right, it's not subject to royal karaka and zealous, but it's not land, right, it can be stolen, then you might have a problem. It's a bavera there. Okay? Fine. So, it's a... Hahi savta da'asai lekame de Rav Nachman. So there was an old woman who came to Rav Nachman. Amalei, she said to him, Reish galusa v'chul rabbanon deveirish galusa besukah dzula aviyasi. They said, the Reish galusa, remember we discussed, the Reish galusa was the ruler of the Jews in Babel, in exile, right? And he's a descendant of Malchus based Ovid, and he has real legal responsibility. And the Gemara at least sometimes thinks that he's a Talmud Chacham, right? The Reish Galusa and all of the Rabbanim who spent their time with him were living in a stolen sukkah. That's what she said to him. Savcha v'lo yashkach barav Nachman. She screamed. She was very angry. She really wanted the wood that was used to build the sukkah, which she's basically claiming for herself. She's saying they stole from her. Right? She was yelling. She wants her wood back, and Rav Nachman didn't give it. He didn't pay any attention. So the Amar Lei, she said to him, "Itisa dehavi leila vua tlas mea v'samni sare avdei tzavka kamaychu v'loy askechi tzuba." So she says to him, "A woman who her father has 318 slaves. Not really 7 by 318, but there you go." Right, is screaming to you and you're not listening. By the way, Rashi says, who's the father with 318 slaves?
Who's the what?
Father who has 318 slaves.
Avraham.
Very good. Avraham Avinu, meaning a child of Avraham Avinu, is screaming to you that something was stolen from her and you're not paying attention? How dare you? Amrlu Rav Nachman. Pa'isehida. Ve'enla elad me'etzim. Bilvad. Rav Nachman says she's just screaming, right? Right. She's a very loud woman, but she has no right to anything except for payment for the wood. Right. She doesn't have a right to the payment for the sukkah itself because of this takanas hashavim. The assumption in the Rishonim is the people who stole it, like basically the Reish Galusa is an important person, right? So does he build his sukkah himself?
No.
Probably not, right? And Mistama, he sent his servants to go build the sukkah. So the servants apparently were not such kosher people. He's decided to steal the wood and basically pocket the money he gave them to buy the wood. Right? Sorry? So, fine. So that's what happened, right? And so, b'diavad, he ended up sitting in a stolen sukkah. It's not that he wanted to. It's not that the Reish Galusa just stole wood. Right? Okay. Fine. Amar Avina. But so then the answer is because of this takanas hashavim. She does have the right to payment for the wood, but she does not have the right to get the wood back itself. It's Amaravina Haikashura de Metalalta de Gzula. Avdi li Rabbanan Takanta Mishum Takanas Marish. Zeravina. This.
So I think it's also because I think we're still paying attention to the fact that it's still Shema the Shema. And so we don't swear by Shema the Shema because
it's just a minute.
We don't know what happened. And so we make sure it happened. But according to, I don't think that needs to be rejected because of the part of the meaning. We just need to find a solution to the part.
Beam for a sukkah, which was if you stole a beam to build a sukkah, then Chachamim made a takana that you should not have, they should only have to pay for it, right? Oh, this deals with Yoni's question. Okay. If somebody stole a beam to build a sukkah, right? And then, and they found out, right? And so, theoretically, would have to take the beam out of his sukkah, right, to return it. No, they returned, they said, Chachamim made this takana even in that case. The takana tashavim that I mentioned, so that people would not have to return a beam which was used for building, was actually it was made in this case as well, specifically. Right? We don't say that there's no hefzer merubah. We don't say it's not such a big deal to have to take apart your sukkah. Right, no, it counts for this as well.
Rashi says because of the simcha of the yosuka.
What? Sorry?
Rashi says the simcha of yosuka is makes it considered like a binyan kavur.
Where does Rashi say that?
Asra told me that he said that.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's a very fascinating thing to find in Rashi.
Maybe in Gittin, because it's from Gittin.
Maybe it's the Rashi in Gittin. The Rashi here just says that because of 7 days is considered a permanent construction, because you're not going to want to tear it down for 7 days, and therefore it is considered, you know, permanent in that sense. Okay. So Pshita, that's obvious. Maishna, Mi'etzim, why is it different to any other structure? Mahu, the same as what you already thought. Eitzim, Shrichi, Aval, Hai, Loi, Shrichi, Yevaloi, Kamash, Malan. I think it's a beam.
Marish is a beam.
Yeah, it's a beam, I was right. No, Marish is not a beam. Marish means the Mirash. It's the from before. That was the takana they made right from the beginning, that's what it means. Kashura does mean a beam, yeah. Why is this, the Gemara says, why is this distinct from a beam? This is obvious, right? We already said that if you use beams, beams for schach, then. Wood for schach, then you don't have to return it. So why is this distinct from using a beam to build your sukkah? The answer is you might have thought that wood to put on top of the sukkah, like little pieces of wood are around all the time. Really big beams are less unusual, and therefore you might have thought that you don't have to return it. Kamash malan, no. Even big beams were part of this takana. Right? You might have thought they didn't make the takana for these really big beams, it's more unusual to steal them. Kamash malan, that no, this was included as well. Okay, fine. Tana, we have Brisa. Yovesh pasul. A lulav which is dry is pasul. Rabbi Yehuda machshir, Rabbi Yehuda says kosher. Honey mili begoy shiva, aval levas shiva hadar be'eni. Bichi revtina afilu achar shiva name yayiv le'idame. Okay, so this whole statement is only within the 7 days of Sukkot, right? But if he actually uses it in a permanent construction, then it'll be true even after Sukkot, right? So the question is, do you have to return it in Sukkot? The answer is no. But and if they sue you in Sukkot, you would only have to pay. But if they sue you after Sukkot, then you can dismantle your Sukkot unless your Sukkot is a permanent construction. Okay.
Alex, that Eitzim Shchicha, doesn't that disprove that professor of yours that said that the whole point of Sukkot is because of the wood shortage?
I don't think you have to disprove that.
No, but I'm just saying it's a.
I don't think you have to disprove that. I don't think that requires any disproving.
No, it doesn't, but it's.
Yeah. As any number of people have noted, there were lots of forests in Eretz Israel prior to the Ottomans, because the Ottomans were the ones who cut them down. But even without that, it doesn't require disproving. It's just stupid. Okay. Tana. And Bryce says, Yavish, Pasul, Rabbi Yehuda Makshir, Lulav, which is Yavish, is Pasul, and Rabbi Yehuda says, Kosher, Amar Rava. Rava says, Bachalik Zululav. Rabbanan Sari Machin and Lulav Esrig, Ma Esrig by Yahadar, Lulav by Yahadar, Rav Yudas are Lulav Machin and Lulav Esrig, Afbe Esrig, Tivriakol, Hadar, Aval Besrev, Tivriakol, Hadar Bainan. Again, Rava says that this agreement is about Lulav. Right? Why? What does that mean, right? Remember we said, why is a Lulav, which is Yavish, which is dried out puzzle? Yeah, it doesn't look nice anymore, right? So, the real question is, the machlekes isn't really per se, is a lulav yavish kasher apostle, the machlekes is, does the lulav have to look nice? Right? Chachamim say, no, yes, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no. And the disagreement is, do we compare a lulav to an esrog? An esrog, for sure, has to look pretty. How do I know? Yeah, it's called a pre-ace hadar. Yeah, it obviously has to look pretty. The Torah compares the lulav to an esrog because it has, you know, kapos tamarim, the lulav, immediately afterwards. Or maybe it doesn't. That's machlokes. Rabbi Yehuda says the rules that apply to esrog don't apply to lulav, and Chachamim say they do. Okay? Uve lulav, loy, bai, Yehuda. Is it really true that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't think a lulav doesn't need to look nice? That's not Rabbi Yehuda. Yagdeno mila maila, my timer, la misham devai hadar. So it says, doesn't Rabbi Yehuda say that you have to tie the different minyan, right, the lulav, the hadasim, and the aravos together? Doesn't he say you have to do that because of hadar, because it looks nice? You have to tie it above, he says. Not because it looks nice, like, no, because it keeps extending time, and rather because it's reading than that it taught, right, you don't remember, it's a really tough for him, kapos, for yichpetenu. Right? Because Rabbi Yehuda says it's called in the Torah kapos tvarim, right? That's the words that are used to describe the lulav. And what does kapos mean? So it comes, he says, it comes from the word, you meant to at least start on the word, kafus. Kafus means, well, my section means imprisoned, right, or tied up. So if the lulav is together, sure, wonderful, it's kosher. And if it's not, you should tie it up so it'll be together, so it won't rustle. Right? That's what Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is. That's why you should tie it above.
So it's not in terms of beauty.
Sorry? It's not an issue of beauty, it's an issue of what is the definition of a lulav, is that it's not just a branch from a palm tree, a young branch from a palm tree, it's a young branch from a palm tree that is tied up. Or it is not rustling anyway. Right? It doesn't move, all the leaves don't move separately. Velay by hadar, is it true that he doesn't require hadar? We ask again. Didn't Rabbi Yehuda say that there is a requirement to tie up the lulav with something which comes from a lulav? Right, so lulav ties are an obvious example. Right, has anybody here built a sukkah?
Yes,
lulav ties. You know what lulav ties, don't you? Have you built a sukkah though? Yeah. Right, so you've seen that sometimes there's a scarf they sell those like hairs. I don't know how else to describe it. Instead of string?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Like in the back of the scarf they sell?
It's called sukkah twine.
Oh, is that what it's called?
Oh, in the sukkah mine in Melbourne.
There you go. It's called sukkah twine. Excellent. It's not really a string of any sort. Right? The reason why you shouldn't use string to tie up your scarf is because the Rambam holds the string is makabel tumah. And remember that the thing you tie up your scarf with might be a davar maimid. We discussed this. Right? It might be the thing which is holding the scarf up. And therefore, you know, it shouldn't be something that's makabel tumah. Those things are not woven, and so they're not string, halachically. Right, they're actually made from lulav. They're strands of lulav dried out. Right, so you shouldn't tie up a lulav with something which doesn't come from a lulav. Right, says Rabbi Yehuda. Isn't that because it looks prettier to tie it up with things that come from the lulav?
No.
So it says, no, loy. Deharma Rava, filu besiva, filu beikra didikla. Rava said, no, it can be even in a sieve, even in a basket, even using... it's not a basket in this case. It looks like a basket, which is why it's called a basket. It's some sort of like plant that grows up around the base of a palm tree, apparently, and sort of wraps itself around the base, and it looks a little bit like a basket, right? Or lulav, or even the roots of a palm tree can use. I mean, you can use things that are associated with a palm tree. It doesn't have to be things that are actually from a lulav, right? So it doesn't mean that it has to look nice. These things don't look so nice. The Elamai time Rabbi Yehuda Hassam the Kasav Lulav Tzarich Eder Vimaisi Mina Harina Havilei Chamsham Minim. Rather, the reason why Rabbi Yehuda holds you should tie up a lulav only with something which actually comes from a palm tree is because the lul, he says, he paskins a lulav tzarich eged. Right, a lulav, remember, critically needs min ha-Torah to be bound together with the hadas and the rabbis. If it's not, it's pasul. Right? And if it's, if you were to use something else for those purposes, then there would be, then you've created a new cheftza of eged, right? You've created a new object, which is the eged, which is the whole bundle. But that object can include something the Torah didn't mention. It includes an extra min, an extra object, which the Torah did not mention. No?
Yes.
And that's going to be a problem of which love?
Bartosif.
Very good. Right, that is a problem of Bartosif. That's for all of you. Ah, okay. So that is a problem of Baal Tosif. Okay, parenthetically. That seems relatively simple, right? Baal Tosif is a love on adding anything to the on adding anything to a mitzvah in the Torah. Here you are adding something to a mitzvah which is written in the Torah, and therefore we have a problem of Baal Tosif, right? A relatively simple comment. It's a problem. There is a big machlokes shown, and the Rambam is explicit that Baal Tosif requires kavana, intent to actually add to the mitzvah. Right? You need. It's not enough to just want to just do something which the Torah doesn't require, even in the context of the mitzvah. You have to deliberately have added something onto the mitzvah, qua added something to the mitzvah deraisa, you know the Torah didn't mention. Right? That's what the Rambam says. The Ravid, while he doesn't buy into that entirely, also accepts the need for a kavana. The Rashba says you're doing something which you think is obligatory when it's not obligatory, meaning you don't have to think it's a mitzvah deraisa, it's enough to just think it's obligatory. Right? But still, your kavana is critical, right? And truth is the Gemara in Sanhedrin links Baal Tosif to kavana, right? And seems to imply at least in certain cases you do need kavana. The Gemara there's a Gemara later in Sukkah that will deal with the this topic later. Kavana in the context of Baal Tosif, we'll deal with a little bit more there. I'm just mentioning it. This is not a completely simple comment, right? How you make this shtim with other sugyos of Baal Tosif is not totally obvious. It might be, some Rishonim think it's just a gzeira, right? You might start thinking, there might be a particular minhag to add a particular thing to the lulav, and then people will start thinking that's obligatory and that would be a problem of Baal Tosif or something like that. But, kitzer, it's not a completely simple comment. Okay, so when we talk about sleeping, about eating and sleeping in Sukkah and Shmini Atzeres, which is later in the Masechta, then we'll deal with Baal Tosif in a little bit more detail. But just to be aware the issue exists. Okay. Over Esrog mi bai Rabbi Yehuda hadar. So the Gemara meet asks, but wait. Where do we get the requirement of hadar in a lulav from, theoretically? An Esrog, right? And the Gemara said, up until now, right, that Rabbi Yehuda would agree that the requirement of hadar, required it looks nice, is true about an Esrog. As well, right? Why? Even for Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because the Pasuk says so explicitly. So the Gemara comes along and says, but how do you know Rabbi Yehuda thinks that an Esrog has to look nice? So, the Gemara said, if you have the four minimum of the lulav, you shouldn't add to them, you shouldn't take away. Right? Those four minimum are what you're meant to use. Right? And if you didn't find an esrog, then you shouldn't bring parish. Rashi says that a parish is an esrog that has been left in water for a very long time to soften it up. That already you cannot use. Right? Velu rimon, you can't use a rimon. You know what a rimon is, pomegranate. You can't use a different fruit, right? Oh, I'm sorry. My bad, I misread that. It doesn't say kavosh, it says chavosh. I'm sorry. It's just a different type of tree. A parish is a different type of tree. My apologies. It's a fruit. My apologies. You can't use an esrog that's been softened up in water, but I will deal with that later, right? Velu rimon, not a pomegranate, and lo davaracha, and not a different, and not anything else. You can't use a different fruit. You can't say, I think apples are beautiful, I'm going to use it in my lulav. That's possible. By the way, the carrots actually do that.
Carrots?
Yeah, just parenthetically. They say free hadar means just a beautiful fruit, so whichever fruit you think is beautiful, you can use.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Kmushin. I'm sorry? What?
I would use a guava.
Okay. If it's slightly dried out, if the esrog is like a little bit dry, but it's still, you know, basically fine. You know, sometimes you open up a lemon or an orange, and it's still edible, but it's dried out a little bit on the inside.
Yeah.
That's not a problem. But if it's completely dried out, you know how that? Have you ever seen some people that they do when they with their esrog at the end of the sukkah, they just leave it?
Yeah, I think it's like tiny. Yeah.
It shrivels, right? It completely dries out.
Correct.
Right, and you then use it as sukkah generation next year.
What?
Sukkah decorations.
Interesting.
Right, people hang it from the sukkah next year. Right, so if you if you have one of those esrogim around, you decided you were going to keep your esrog from year to year, and then for some reason you didn't get an esrog before sukkah. So you got an esrog and your child sat on it and squished it, or I don't know, something happened to the esrog. Right, you don't have an esrog come sukkahs. Right, you cannot use that esrog that you dried out. It's possible. Right, a completely dry esrog is possible. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, archivation. Rabbi Yehuda says you can use one of those. Right, which implies that Rabbi Yehuda maybe doesn't require hard dough with an esrog, even with an esrog.
He also wants hard dough, but it doesn't need to be hard dough now.
Either that, or you might have told that the name of the tree in Tanakh is an Itz Hadar.
Oh, that's true.
Right? No, it's called that because it and its fruits are beautiful, but that doesn't mean the fruit is b'hagdara beautiful for the purpose of using it on sukkahs.
What? Alright.
Okay. So then the Gemara says, Ve'amar Rabbi Yehuda. Right, Rabbi Yehuda says, Maisa, there was a time that's happened. Bivnei Kroch and Shayu Marush Nesalavim with Nevnehan. There was a city, right? Right where they would, there weren't so many palm trees there, and so what they'd do is they would actually bequeath, they would pass down their lulavs year to year, and when they died, their kids would use their lulavs, right? Amruloid, and they said, implying, if they're passing down their lulavs and they're stroking from year to year, they're dry.
Yeah.
They're definitively dry, right? They don't dry out in seconds, but they don't last that long.
They pass down the etrog as well?
That seems to be the way he's learning it, right? If he's saying an esrog, this is a raya that an esrog can be yavesh, can be dried out, it must be that he's assuming the esrog gets passed down too.
Passed down to Arabot?
I don't know.
Arabot take 2 days to go there.
Arabot are also more available.
Arabot
is available, I suppose. Mazel tov, you should be proud of yourself. Okay. Amrulay misham raya, is that a really such a good proof? Ein shas hadchak raya. Right? When there's a sort of a desperate situation, there's just no palm trees and they were forced to pass it down, that's not going to be a raya. That's not going to be a raya that this is in fact mutter.
Cool.
Right? Meaning, now, to be noted, the statement ein shas hadchak raya can mean two things, and it's really used in both circumstances, and I suspect I'll tell you which one I think it is in a second. Here. You can say Ein Shas Hadchak Raya, meaning that when poskim say something is mutter because the situation is desperate, like, you know, for example, psakim that were given out, lahavdil elef halftei avdolis, in the hospital, in the Holocaust, right? They don't form a proof for what's mutter or aser in a context which is not the Holocaust, right? Because the circumstances were so desperate that they were saying things that are mutter that are, you would never say a mutter, but they just said it because, like, imal asot. Right? Or, for example, some people said that you can buy flour from the market in Russia, in the Soviet Union, and use that to make matzah. We usually assume that's aser, because flour, kemach min ashuk, right, the Gemara says, the Gemara says kemach min ashuk is mukhtar. So the Gemara says you can use kemach, you use flour which is bought from goyim to make flour, to make matzah on sukkahs if you have no other option, right, if you don't have matzah which is flour which is shmura. But, right, bizman hazeh, right, the wheat is soaked before it's ground as part of the bleaching process. Right? And that's a really big problem, is the Gemara seems to imply it's aser, and most Shonim assume that's chametz matzah, that's chametz gomer. Right? So, given that that's the case, right, there were some very few, admittedly, opinions that said Jews in the Soviet Union, if they wanted to fill matzah because it was illegal to buy matzah in the Soviet Union, could buy flour from the goyim and just use that flour to make matzah, even though it had been soaked. That's part of the bleaching process. But nobody would say that's mutter in any other circumstance. Right? It was maybe mutter specifically then, even then probably not, but like maybe mutter then because of the circumstances the Jews found themselves in, that they really, really would have no ability to fill matzah if they didn't do this. Right? So sometimes pliskim will say something's mutter, even though in any other circumstance they would never say that's mutter, because it's just they feel that there's no option. Right? Torah matahealeah, right? If you don't say this is mutter, then the whole Torah is going down a tube. Nobody will keep anything because they won't be able to. Right?
Yes.
That's fine. That's one way of saying en shas pakraya. Another way of saying en shas pakraya is people are desperate, right? And they'll do things which they think are mutter, but they didn't actually ask the shayla. Or they did ask the shayla and they were told the sasra and they did it anyway.
Oh, because they didn't need food.
I suspect in this case it's actually the latter. Right, meaning, chachamim, I don't think when chachamim say en shas et chakraya, they're saying that it is mutter in a case where there is no lulav available to use a dried out lulav. Right? I think they are saying that these people didn't ask. Right? They just sort of assumed it was mutter because they anyway couldn't get lulav. Right? The reason why I think that is because all through Europe you have, through the Middle Ages, these diyunim and rishonim about whether, you know, this lulav, which is a little bit funny, is mutter, and this esrog, which might not really be an esrog, is kosher for the chag, and da 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 da. Right? And nobody said, just use the one you used last year. So, at least for Pashtus, they weren't learning this Mara, saying that if you have no other option, then you can use one which is dried out. Right? They were saying that if it's dried out, it's possible. Let's see if the thing that now arrived from someplace that we don't really know, and we're not really sure what happened with it, v'chali, 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 if that is in fact a kosher lulav.